Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
Explore the world's hidden wonders on the Atlas Obscura podcast. A village in India where everyone's name is a song. A boiling river in the Amazon. A spacecraft cemetery in the middle of the ocean. Every day, the Atlas Obscura podcast will blow your mind in 15 minutes. You can find it on the SiriusXM app, Pandora, or wherever you get your podcasts. And don't forget to follow the show so you never miss an episode.
This is an historic time.
This is going to be a multi-year fight.
Why is it taking so long to get a screening test?
It is not a hoax. It is real.
Something that we have never experienced before.
Wash hands, wash hands, wash hands.
I mean, you're the scientist. You're going to have to tell me.
Welcome, welcome to Science Rules Coronavirus Edition. I'm your host, Bill Nye, and this is the series that brings you the latest analysis and the science of this pandemic to keep you informed, prepared, and calm. We're still all in this together, my friends. More than 5 million people in the U.S. have been infected with this novel coronavirus. That's roughly 1.5% of the population. There have been at least 170,000 deaths, which means that the vast majority of people with the virus are indeed recovering. But what does that recovery look like? More specifically, what are the long-term health effects of COVID-19? Here to help answer that is Dr. William Petrie. He is the chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and International Health at the University of Virginia. He is also an alumnus of Lafayette Elementary School, where he and I played kickball and stuff like that. And now the great circle of life has brought us back together. Bill, it's so good to see you. May I call you William? Wait, Dr. Petrie, may I call you Bill?
Oh, Bill, please. It's just so wonderful to see you again, too. Thank you.
Wow. You're this big doggone deal, man. It's so cool. I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us. What are the long-term effects?
What we know from a questionnaire that the CDC sent out is the average person takes about 3 weeks to recover from the illness so that they're feeling well again.
Now, when you say recover, is there degrees of recovery kind of thing?
I believe there are. And if the average person is taking 3 weeks, that means half the people are taking longer than 3 weeks to recover from this. Actually, I just finished a week of like working in our special pathogens unit. And so over the week that I was on service, I cared for about 30 patients that were hospitalized with COVID-19.
And this is in Charlottesville, Virginia.
That's right. Yeah. University of Virginia. We have like a brand new part of the hospital and we've dedicated an entire floor to caring for patients with COVID-19 and just spectacular nursing care. It's really was fun working there.
How many people recover? And just to get grim on every, how many people die?
Yeah, so no one died the week that I was there. We had one person who needed to go to intensive care because her oxygen requirements got too high for what we could provide on our part of the ward.
So your COVID ward is not the intensive care ward. Different thing.
That's right. Yeah, it's a different thing. And I'd say overall, the patients are doing better because we have like two drugs now that we didn't have even a month ago. We know like the dexamethasone decreases deaths.
Dexamethasone, what is it?
Yeah, so dexamethasone is a prednisone derivative. And it dampens down the inflammation because it looks like a lot of the damage in the lungs is from the body's immune response and not so much from the virus itself. And that's actually one of the things that I'm doing research on is to understand how the immune system could actually be making this disease worse.
This is the mythic cytokine storm?
That's right. Although our evidence is that it's more of an allergic storm. It's more of a cytokine called interleukin-13, which is really important in allergic asthma. That seems to be driving some of the pulmonary damage.
Okay, so I've heard of interleukin. right? I've heard of white blood cells. I've heard of leukocytes. That's a white blood cell. What's interleukin-13?
So interleukin-13, that's a way that the immune system talks to itself. And so one cell will make this protein called interleukin-13, and it goes to another white blood cell and activates it. And so cells like eosinophils that are a big problem in allergy are activated by IL-13.
This thing starts in your lungs. How long does it take to get all these other extraordinary places that it seems to go?
Well, you know, it was so interesting for me, like caring for the patients like over the last week, because until you take care of someone with an illness, I don't think you really understand it. And it's so dramatic how insidious the onset is, that this infection is happening over several weeks' time from getting infected to having really severe disease. And that's really unlike any other viral infection that I know of.
What do we know about the biggest of picture, like the overall stats, how long this thing lasts, how long it takes you to recover, how many people will have long-term effects? Do you have intimate knowledge of those things?
So the average person is going to take about like 3 weeks to recover. Probably like the side effects we worry about are the lungs, but recovering from any viral infection, you can develop like chronic fatigue-like syndrome. And so like Lyme disease, this has been a problem. There's a viral infection called dengue, where if you get these symptoms, it can take you weeks to months to recover. And we don't, as physicians, understand what is wrong with the immune system that, you know, for a prolonged period of time that you're not recovering completely, that you can have fatigue, a cough, shortness of breath.
So are those immune problems? Your immune system not getting over itself?
That's what most people believe. Again, it's something that we don't understand. It's clear that this is a common complication of this infection, of Lyme disease, of dengue. And there's research going on, and there's a lot of people that are affected by it. And it's hard as a doctor, because I can tell a patient, this is a real disease you have, and I don't know what the right thing is to do for it.
Is there a list of symptoms from worst to not so bad?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, being completely without symptoms, of course, is the best. We don't really understand like how many people are completely asymptomatic. Most people have 2 or 3 days where they're pre-symptomatic. And so they have the infection, they're going to get ill, and they don't know it yet. And we see damage in their lungs in this pre-symptomatic period. And then the commonest way to present with this is with cough and fever, and like a daily fever. But some people can have diarrhea. You can have something as mild as just like, you know, cold and flu-like symptoms with like, you know, the sniffles and a cough. That what's interesting is that this progresses though, over days to weeks. And so the people who are most severely ill, you can look back in time and the cough becomes shortness of breath. And then the shortness of breath becomes so severe that they need to come in the hospital to get it supplemental oxygen. And it's this very, very slow but relentless progression, which to me is like so remarkable about this infection. It makes me really suspect that a lot of this is immune mediated, because the virus can replicate so rapidly, it doesn't need like days to weeks to make you sick. And so I think it's the immune system that's contributing so much.
All right. So those are symptoms going in. What are the effects going out? Do the symptoms go away in the reverse order?
They do. And so the patients that we were discharging, for example, one of the key things is can you get out of your hospital bed and walk to the bathroom without getting short of breath? Because that's like a sort of a stress test, you know, that you're exercising by walking. So that's a key thing for sending someone home. And then the fever disappears almost immediately, the daily fever, but that's because of the dexamethasone, because it so suppresses the immune system that you lose that fever.
Huh.
But again, it was a very encouraging experience for me working over the last week, because there's so many things we know how to do today that we didn't know how to do a month ago. You know, that's like really amazing.
It is, yeah. So let me ask you this. So let's say somebody has no symptoms or very minor symptoms. Does he or she get the same chronic long-term effects that somebody with big, heavy-duty symptoms had?
We think not. I think it's going to take, like, you know, additional time to know for sure. But we're most concerned about patients who were so sick that they needed to be on a ventilator. And again, like, most of them are surviving and they're going home and they're resuming normal lives. But we're concerned whether their lung function is going to totally return to normal, because this cytokine, interleukin 13, not only does it cause asthma, but it helps promote tissue healing. But when you heal your lungs, you can scar them or get fibrosis. And a fibrotic lung just doesn't expand as well, and you don't have the same capacity to get oxygen. And so that's the concern, is like this minority of patients may have long-term complications.
And it would be, you think the complications would be in the lungs?
Predominantly. There's other things that are going on. The clotting system is activated for reasons we don't understand. There can be some damage to the heart and to the kidneys. But I'd say, like, the lion's share of the problem is in the lungs.
So I think about, you know, my parents smoked back at Lafayette Elementary School, and they stopped. And the belief was that their lungs recovered over the course of decades. I'm throwing around a term. Does a fibrotic lung that's been damaged by this, recover?
It doesn't appear to. You're right, though. If you stop smoking, your risk of cancer drops to, like, sort of baseline after about 5 years or so. But fibrosis in the lungs doesn't heal completely. And that's different than in the liver, for example. Like, if you get fibrosis in your liver from hepatitis, that heals, but less so in the lung. And again, we don't understand what's different about those two organs, that one is able to heal better than another.
We'll be back right after this.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries, plus napkins, plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this, plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.
So let me just muse about this. So let's say you get sick with coronavirus, you have a fever, you test positive, but you never go to the hospital. You recover, like the majority of people do, right? How concerned should those people be about long-term chronic effects, like damage to their liver, damage to their lungs, but there's even brain damage in some cases, right?
That's right. The loss of taste and smell that is sort of characteristic of COVID-19, that's indication that the virus has invaded into the central nervous system. And it can rarely cause an encephalitis, which is an inflammation of the brain. Again, though, most of that resolves, like, within about a week or so of recovery. You know, I've been sort of, like, you know, telling you, like, all the problems with the immune system, but the immune system is really miraculous in this infection. It you know, 99% of people completely recover from the infection thanks to our immune system.
So if you don't go to the hospital and you recover, it's likely you'll recover completely.
That's exactly right.
So listen to that, everybody. If you get it, it's likely you'll recover completely.
Yeah. And that's why a vaccine is going to work so well, because this is not a virus that mutates rapidly like influenza does. And so it's a very stable target for the immune
system. Why doesn't it mutate? Everybody else mutates. Why doesn't it mutate?
Because it has a proofreader. And so most of these viruses, they make mistakes all the time when they make copies of the virus. Coronaviruses actually have an enzyme that goes and double checks, just like spell check on Microsoft Word, and corrects any errors that are made. And so that keeps it from mutating very rapidly.
How did it evolve this mechanism?
Well, you know, I don't know how it did, but it had to do that because it's a very, very large virus. It's about three times as big as influenza. And so influenza can get away by making some errors. But with a larger genome, you make enough errors, you can have, like, a non-viable virus, one that is no longer infectious. And so it had to evolve a proofreading activity or it would have disappeared.
The more complicated the car, the more likely it is to break down.
Exactly. And then this is like a really good news story, because that's why the vaccines are going to work so well. We've been trying for 30 years to make a vaccine against HIV, and that's because it mutates so rapidly. This is just a very stable target for a vaccine.
How does it compare physically in size with HIV?
So it's three times as big as HIV. The genome is three times larger for the new coronavirus.
So what do you predict about the long-term effects? Like how much, when you're in the hospital, it's traumatic, right? How much of that sticks with patients that you've seen get out? You know, how long does this thing, these post-trauma things stick around? And, you know, how does it compare to other diseases people recover from, like pneumonia, what have you?
Yeah. Well, Bill, I think it's more similar than dissimilar. And so whenever you're very ill and you're in a hospital bed, that just saps your strength. You know, just like lying in bed is going to like debilitate you. And so having physical therapy, occupational therapy to help you recover from an infection like this is important. But that's true for bacterial pneumonias. That's true if you've had a heart attack or a stroke. There's going to be a period of rehabilitation after a severe illness like this.
So how do people rehabilitate from coronavirus? Just walk around?
That's part of it. One of the things that we'll do before we discharge someone from the hospital is really assess, like, is there someone at home that can help them, you know, so they're not totally on their own? Do we need to get them like a visiting nurse to help out? And sometimes the best thing to do is to go to a rehab facility short term where you can get physical therapy and then regain your strength, you know, especially patients that are in the hospital for prolonged periods of time.
So can we list the effects, chronic effects that are going to stick with you? You probably have reduced lung function because of it's been scarred. Your lungs have been scarred.
Yes.
Your nervous system that's inhibiting your ability to smell, that'll probably recover, right?
That's right.
Now, what about pressure on your heart? Is that going to recover?
Yes, in general, like rare exceptions. And so what we see is we can see like low levels of heart damage during the acute infection. We can measure a heart enzyme called troponin, which should not be in the bloodstream. But when the heart is damaged, it leaks out of the muscle cells in the heart. And so,
wow.
Yeah. So even though you can't tell that the heart's not functioning normally, you can tell that it's being damaged by the infection. But those troponins go back to normal even while someone's in the hospital and in almost every case. So the body is you know, quite amazing in its ability to recover from infections like this.
Let's see, what else are there? Your weakness, fatigue?
That's right. And yeah, and those are some that's like the really vexing problem is like the chronic fatigue, weakness, like that you get short of breath when you exercise. There's a fair percentage of patients who were hospitalized with COVID-19 that continue to have problems like that for weeks to months after being discharged. And again, that's something we don't understand, like what's causing that.
It's just what a mystery on top of mystery. And you don't know what the multi-year effects are because nobody's been around for multi-years with this thing. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's what's so important about what you do, Bill, is your ability to get people interested in science. Because as a physician, every single patient I see, there's not enough evidence for me to know exactly what the right thing is to do. There's huge things that we need to understand about medical science in order to improve care. And I've seen like great advances even over the last few months with COVID-19, but there's still so much to learn.
So how is this the same or different from other big time land you in the ICU diseases?
We know that one of the most interesting things is that most diseases as an adult that land you into the ICU are after you've had chronic illnesses. And so you've had diabetes or heart failure or lung failure. Those are the sort of things like that when you're in your 70s and 80s can catch up with you and you can end up in the ICU. So many of the patients I was caring for in the last week have never seen a doctor before. They've been in perfect health. They have like no past medical history. And so this ability of this infection, you know, to place you on your back, short of breath, even like needing mechanical ventilation is quite remarkable in a terrible way.
How old were the people in your special ward there?
So the youngest was 23 and the oldest was 80. And the average patient is about your and my age, Bill. That's the reason for young people to be super careful, because even if you're like 20, your parents, your grandparents are susceptible to being infected. And so part of your behavior should be to protect your elderly relatives.
I mean, it's moving so fast. So we're going to learn something from this virus. We are going to learn something about the immune system. We're going to learn something about how to treat patients that present. I'm talking like you guys, that show up with these symptoms. But then in the bigger picture, you study the long-term effects, right, of this infection. How concerned should everybody be if, let's say, you get COVID-19 and you recover? How concerned should you be about your long-term prospects for your life or what have you?
Oh, I'd say in general, you should not be concerned at all. And so things about like long-term complications are going to be the minority of patients who had had the most severe illness. I think that overall, the outlook is pretty rosy with this infection.
Wow. Except we've got to get millions and millions of people immune one way or the other. Right. Now, by the way, how often do people who recover get reinfected? Does your immune response stay with you, or does it not, the way people are speculating?
Yeah, it appears that the immune system does not stay with you long term with this. And so the expectation is the way that the antibody levels fall after the infection is like 6 months to a year later, you might be susceptible to a new infection.
That's creepy.
That's one of the challenges with making a vaccine is that we understand from other vaccines how to change things and improve on the natural immune response to give you a sustained antibody response, like the yellow fever vaccine. Yeah, I'm sure that you've had that. I've had that vaccine. Even though we're never exposed to yellow fever, we have high antibody levels in our bloodstream every second of our life for like decades after that vaccine. And so we know enough about immunology now to make a COVID vaccine that looks like the yellow fever vaccine that gives you this sustained immune response. And so I think that there's solutions to the problem that natural immunity against this infection is short-lived. It's unlike anything in my whole career in medicine to see a brand new infectious disease, to understand this, to see a pandemic and to understand the huge impact this is having on the immune system. And then to be able to use the things that I've learned as a medical scientist to work to try to improve the situation. And it, you know, it's a collaborative thing. You know, lots of people are just saying, like, what do I know how to do as a scientist that could help this disease? And so and we're seeing that with the pace of progress is just amazing.
So you were in the COVID ward all last week. I presume you gowned up, wore all the N95s, face shields, spacesuits, Sandy the Squirrel outfits you could find. You were safe when you were in that environment.
Yeah, there was actually probably no place safer, because the attention to infection control is so great there. We actually have like a chaperone that helps us to put like the gowns on and to take them off properly. And it's actually harder to get them off without contaminating yourself. And so someone is watching you every step.
How concerned should people be about getting sick? What do you think your long-term prospects are?
Well, I think that it behooves each of us to do everything possible to prevent from getting infected. And so not to do activities like with large groups, because, you know, the issue is super spreaders. You know, if you're in a group of like 300 people, chances are there's going to be one super spreader there. Whereas if you're in a group of like 30 people, probably not. And so like keeping out of large groups, wearing masks, washing your hands, all those things are so important. And I think that practicing those things, I think we've seen in Europe and in China that works. You know, it's not very sexy. It's before a vaccine, but, you know, Europe and China could control it just through really common sense measures like that.
You lose your sense of taste and sense of smell for a while. So that means your nervous system's being infected. people have talked about brain damage and long-term, I guess, dementia. How concerned should people be about that?
Right now, I would think not very concerned. I think that that's a possibility. And again, when we have like 5 million people that are infected, I think we're going to see, you know, unfortunate rare individuals where the central nervous system is a bigger part of the picture. Right now, it's not a huge issue, thankfully.
So let me ask you this. If you were king of the forest, is there anything you want everybody to know or things you want everybody to know about the long-term effects of coronavirus?
Well, I would just echo what you said at the beginning, is that we're all in this together and that each of us through our individual actions can help to protect not only ourselves, but everyone else. And by doing so, then we won't run the risk of being in the hospital with it. And then some of the long-term complications, especially like the chronic fatigue, we're not going to like suffer from that.
So there you go, people. My guest today has been Dr. William Petrie. He is the chief of the Division of Infectious Diseases and International Health at the University of Virginia. If you have some questions, leave us a voicemail. The number here is 201-472-0785. You can also write to me at askbillnye.com. And I am Bill Nye. And my friends, this is a pandemic. And as Dr. Petrie just reminded us yet again, we are all in this together. And so when it comes to addressing the coronavirus, more than ever, science rules. If you like Science Rules, and of course I hope you do, please take a moment to rate and review it in Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. Helps us out and helps other people learn about the show. Helps us know what you want to hear. So thank you. Science Rules Coronavirus Edition is produced by Harry Huggins and Corey S. Powell. Our editor is Tracy Samuelson. Our engineer is Luz Fleming, who also mixed this episode. Josephine Martirana is our executive producer. Special thanks to Casey Halford. And Chris Bannon is the chief content officer, the CCO at Stitcher. And at Stitcher, everyone, science rules. And there are three more things I'd like you to keep in mind. Wash your hands, wear a mask, and keep a social distance. Carry on, everyone. Be safe out there.
Walmart Plus members save on meeting up with friends. Save on having them over for dinner with free delivery with no hidden fees or markups. That's groceries plus napkins plus that vegetable chopper to make things a bit easier. Plus, members save on gas to go meet them in their neck of the woods. Plus, when you're ready for the ultimate sign of friendship, start a show together with your included Paramount Plus subscription. Walmart Plus members save on this plus so much more. Start a 30-day free trial at walmartplus.com. Paramount Plus, Essential plan only. Separate registration required. See Walmart Plus terms and conditions.